Why are you just pop along in there?
It hasn't been out that long.
Oh, really? The latest,
Which is part of the problem. That's why I said we weren't going to review this. This session wouldn't be a review of everybody's confirmation material because, for one reason or another, we haven't been. That material hasn't been shared with us. Also, there's a peculiar, sometimes in the way that the Synod is divided up responsibilities, there's a kind of a peculiar division. We have in Board for Youth Services the responsibility for junior high ministry, but that is not confirmation. And confirmation falls under parish services and education. And so they're overdoing education for confirmation, and we are doing more things in terms of how to help youth ministry happen with junior high groups and junior high kids apart from the confirmation class. Somehow they have to be supportive of each other, and they can't be mutually exclusive, but there are one or two frustrations involved in that. As I thought about the subject of confirmation, though, I must admit that I had some of the same questions that were asked about that, because I was just given the subject of confirmation, and then I asked for clarification on it and began to think about it. I think one of the problems that you'll have with confirmation is not so much content. I think probably you can use any particular material with some success, but the biggest frustration with confirmation class is the junior high teenager, the ones who are in that transitional phase from childhood to teenage, from childhood to adult, and there's some real problems with that. And that's what you experience in a confirmation class that can make a confirmation class very frustrating. So then I'm assuming that the reason that I was asked to do confirmation in that light was because we have just produced something called the Junior High Kit, which is a piece that's designed to help sensitize people to the needs and the dreams and the concerns of a junior high youth. And it has been called, quote-unquote, by a non-Lutheran reviewer as a $5 treasure. And I guess I would encourage you to get in touch with the kit. It's available through our office, and it is $5. And its general objective is to help people understand what the junior high young person is all about. I've given you two handouts out of the kit as a sort of introduction to it, but there are 14 pieces and a resource called Junior High Retreats, which you might find particularly helpful on Vicarage, in that the Junior High Retreat book here, it's a resources for youth ministry, includes six retreats based on the six chief parts of the catechism. So you could take your junior high class, your eighth grade confirmation class or whatever, on six individual retreats and work through the six parts of the catechism in a retreat setting, which I think could be helpful. There's also another retreat in here on baptism, and this was designed by a former member of the Board for Youth Services staff, step-by-step, point-by-point on acquainting themselves with what baptism is all about for a junior high young person. That can be particularly important in that a learned somebody or other, one person once observed to me that the reason Reformed churches have a lot of success with junior high and senior high kids is their conversion experience, born-again experience theology. And the fact that the junior high, senior high youth can identify a particular time when he or she made a particular decision and he or she feels particularly committed and a part of the church, that they've had that opportunity and they can point to that specific individual moment and they feel very good about it and they feel very good about themselves. And for Lutherans, it's not quite that simple. For the young person to understand that that moment is baptism and to look back at that time when for most of them they were a little babe in arms and they really don't remember that experience, and so that they don't have that specific point that they really feel like they can identify, even though we can identify for them. June 18th, 1962. They don't feel as comfortable with that as if they said it was last Thursday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I prayed with my friend. So that's another thing that you have to work with in confirmation, is help them to understand their relationship with God, their being a part of the family of God, their being a part of the whole Christian life, and what that means, and the ramifications for them in the various nuances and aspects of all the things that they are involved in. Anytime you've got anything to question or feel free.
How do we get this thing? It's very quick. I mean, you have to write to your...
Yeah, or you can call the office and we'll send it out to you and bill you, of course. But
what's your phone number?
231-6969.
I commented to your remarks about Reformed churches and invested in time into it. I wondered to myself if maybe that shouldn't be one of our goals in confirmation class, not to just educate and run them through and graduate. But might one of our goals be to lead these kids to an experience of reaffirmation of their faith, that they can point to that and say, you know, I had an experience. I studied the Bible and I got in front of the whole church and said, this is really what I believe.
I think that plays a part of it. I'm not sure that I'd go so far as to say that they have to have that specific day and time or that specific experience, but I think that part of our job in confirmation is to help them understand that this is my faith, you know, this is my God, those kinds of things. One of the characteristics of a junior high young person is that he or she has lots of questions, and a lot of them are oriented towards their faith, towards God, towards things religious, and sometimes they will ask you very threatening questions for those of us who are so deeply rooted in Orthodox Lutheran theology, and you know, for a teenager to come in and say, is Jesus really God? That can be a very honest gut reaction question for that junior high kid. And very often, well-meaning pastors, vicars, directors of Christian education, whatever, shake in their boots when that question is asked. I think what you're suggesting is correct, though, in that we help them work through that whole thing so that all of those facts and figures that we know so well become their facts and figures, become a part, an essence of what they believe and the way they express it. And maybe that, you know, then maybe they look at the Confirmation Sunday maybe as that time of reaffirmation. Hopefully that's what they're doing. Hopefully it's not just a drudgery or a problem. Why don't we look very quickly at this piece called Profile Junior High Youth, because that, in a very, very condensed form, summarizes what a junior high kid is going through. There's another piece in the junior high kit called The Exciting Energized Enigma, or What Is This Thing Called a Junior High? And this is a more detailed piece in explaining the kinds of things that a junior high youth is experiencing and the kinds of questions they have, and a little bit more about how to deal with it. But there are several things that are very much a part of their life. One of is just the whole area of the physiological changes that are going on in their bodies, because they are in that time from being children to the time of becoming adults, and they are gaining physically the adult attributes that are part of the human physiology. That presents some interesting problems, and you will experience those interesting problems. A junior high body wears out through the process of growing. And I hadn't really ever thought about that until I became involved in the study of junior high physiology. But in the process of growing, that takes energy, and the bodies literally wear out. That's why junior high kids often appear to be lazy. Why a lot of junior high mothers, you may have this experience, that a mother comes and says, Johnny is always sleeping. He sleeps till noon on Saturday morning, and he went to bed at 8 o'clock, and I just don't understand it. He's so lazy. Well, it may not be that he's lazy at all. He may literally be worn out from growing, and that may be hard to understand, but it is a physiological fact. On the other hand, when they're between these growth spurts, they may have so much energy, mother can't stand it, and she comes 3 weeks later, and she says, Johnny just won't stop. He's hyperactive. What am I going to do? Maybe I should go to the doctor and get some medicine and calm him down or something. That's the other side of the junior high kid. And you'll experience both of those as you're trying to teach a confirmation class. One week they may all be dull, and the next week you can't get them off the wall. And you just simply have to, and that's where the tension, I think, for confirmation and junior high counselors comes in. It's just, how do you deal with those changes? Because sometimes they can be so dramatic. A junior high kid can be very emotional. He feels things much more intensely. And laughter and fun will be twice as noisy. And he will cry or feel very bad at a much smaller incident. simply because his emotions are on high and low peaks and ups and downs all as well. And we just have to remember that they're going through all those things. We did the same thing. And in being sensitive to that, I think that'll help us when we're trying to instruct them. You know, when they, for one reason or another, everybody comes in and they memorize no Bible passages. Might be a very valid reason. Maybe they were just all tired. And maybe that's all right, because the next week they'll memorize twice as much. But, you know, just keeping those things in mind.
Do you attempt then to alter your teaching style and methods according to those fluctuations, or do you try to maintain an equilibrium and kind of offset that fluctuation?
I try to personally maintain an equilibrium spontaneity. Maintaining a certain standard, a certain expectation of what I would expect in terms of, I do expect memorization. And I think that's a modern education in the late 60s and 70s really was moving people away from the whole concept of memorization. I think they were wrong. And there are educators now who are beginning to say they were wrong. I think that's a challenge. And a junior high kid, for the most part, can pick up on the challenge. You may have to adjust somewhat because maybe two or three of your kids can memorize five verses a week, and a couple of them can only memorize one. And we have to recognize that they're at various stages mentally, and that's all right. But I do think you can have standards that you expect to be achieved. On the other hand, you have to be certainly flexible so that they can be expressive of their questions, their concerns, their dreams, or whatever. I do remember teaching a particular seventh grade confirmation class that had a couple of girls in it that were always thinking. And we had to be flexible to allow their questions to come out. All the kids that ultimately had the same questions, they just weren't as vocal about. But it might happen right in the middle of the confirmation class, and we might not spend any time on the rest of the lesson. We just simply dealt with their questions, whether that be the divinity of Christ or ordination of women or whatever. And we dealt with all of those things at seventh grade. But that was important to them. And ultimately, they came to understand, at least they knew where I was coming from and I knew where they were coming from. We might not have ended up agreeing at the very end, but at least we were in touch with each other's feelings and understanding. I think that's important, to be certainly flexible within with certain standards, certain guidelines. It may be that you'll have to say, well, we really have to move on if we're going to accomplish this today, but I'm willing to stay an extra half hour after class, or what about if we meet Saturday morning over a Coke or something, you know, where they can bring their questions back. And you also will have a little time to do a little research and register all the books and check out exactly what you're talking about. They're going through the physical changes. They're going through mental changes. The mental changes are a curious thing. Junior high kids, for the most part, especially 6th and 7th graders, and by the way, junior high for us is 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, or what's called in some areas as a middle school. But 5th, 6th, and 7th graders have shorter attention spans, especially 5th and 6th graders. And they're very useful. Part of that is because they're conditioned by cartoons on Saturday morning. And they think in terms of 7, 8, 12 minutes. And the maximum time probably that you can expect them to devote their energies to one thing is probably about 20 minutes. As they grow older, as you move into the 7th, 8th, and 9th grade years, their attention spans are longer. And you can maybe expect them to put a little more time and energy for a longer period of time. One of the things that suggests is that as you're planning a confirmation class, if you're given responsibility for 7th grade, you might, and you have an hour and a half, you might want to plan your class agenda in terms of 20 minutes and 5-minute breaks, or 5-minute times for music, exercise, standing up, moving about, or just conversation, where there's a break between the time that they really have to give their attention to what you're doing or what you expect them to be doing. If you move beyond the 20 minutes, you're going to begin to have problems. They're going to get tired. They're going to get impatient. Their attention is going to move elsewhere. We're involved in a thing called the Early Adolescent Project, where we're going to study junior high youth and their parents. And one of the things we have learned is that we can't expect the junior high we're using a 400-question survey instrument, and we have to give that instrument in such a way that they don't have to spend more than 30 minutes at a time answering questions. So we have to provide a break time. Otherwise, they simply won't do it. They'll go through 100 questions in the first 20 minutes, and then you'll notice a tremendous decrease, and they'll maybe only get 10 questions done in the next 10 minutes. It's absolutely amazing. That's a mental thing. Their attention spans are shorter. Well, not necessarily if you've planned your agenda. If you've looked at the class and you know what needs to be taught, then maybe don't hold the hard and fast 20-minute rule. You may go 15 minutes, 5-minute break period or whatever, then you go 25 minutes because that's the flow of the class. And you feel like within 15 minutes you can accomplish this, but you better not go on into the next. So that suggests that you need to be well acquainted with what you need to teach and what kinds of things need to happen, and also be somewhat in tune with how long a time it's going to take to do those kinds of things. So that's just a burden on you as the teacher or the educator. But of course, you can do that.
I've been given the task, and I've been taking the first class of Contraband, and I'm kind of confused in my ideas. I'd like to make this different than just a regular classroom. I'd like to maybe work with something where they have nothing on their desk at all and work with memory and repetition, not so it becomes boring, but just to keep things moving so that they can also have this stuff not just out on paper but in their head and become a part of it. And I'm wondering, just what sort of scenario that I've given you, would a fifth or sixth grader be capable of doing?
Probably more capable than sitting down with a pen and paper and being expected to take notes. You might need to watch out for, in terms of repetition or memorization. Jesse Jackson does something like that. He'll get 10,000 people, teenagers, in an auditorium, and he'll do a. It almost becomes a. In a sense, he'll tell you, I, and all the kids way on, I, and then he'll say, I am, and they'll say, I am, and they'll say, I am God, and it becomes a really a big thing. They get wrapped up in the whole experience. But then, is it because of the experience, or is it because they really believe that they are God's child, or they are okay, or whatever? I think what you're suggesting is, how do we make confirmation and the material we're presenting meaningful to them? And it may not be that you do that kind of rote learning or that kind of where you simply report back everything that the tape recorder kind of thing. But designing activities so that the content that you have presented or that you feel needs to be gotten across, they can also experience somehow. That may mean that a part of the confirmation instruction is not only whatever book you choose to use, but periodically that includes paper and color crayons, or paper and magic markers, or it includes felt and scissors and glue, or it includes particular songs that are applicable, where they not only learn from you certain content, but then they can somehow physically, tangibly, texturally apply what they've learned, be that making a banner or singing a song or drawing a picture or writing a poem, those kinds of activities. Part of that problem is there are some people who teach confirmation only in terms of the activities, and the content gets lost in terms of the gimmicks. Now, I have some concern about that. A lot of people have lost the whole concept of memorization and are simply in favor. I really like the idea of examination in front of the elders and, if can be, in front of the congregation. Now, I know that that's a certain amount of pressure on the kids, but I also know that when it's done in the spirit of good fun and good faith, it can be a really neat experience. And I did it with my confirmation classes in the parish I was serving in, and it became an enjoyable kind of thing. Because it wasn't as if they were threatened with some fear of being damned eternally if they messed up on a question. It became a matter of pride that each one of them could indeed know the answers to those questions. Now, part of my concern is a number of churches have gotten away from examination altogether, and they'll have their kids write a poem, make a banner, sing a song, and the kids don't get the opportunity to really get involved, I guess. That's my concern, is that they're kind of plugged into the gimmicks, but they're not really learning, or they're not really absorbing. Now, that's a personal prejudice and an observation, but I have some real concerns about that. I think part of the reason myself and the generation before me, and generations before me, are... The reason we know the things we do, the reason we are Lutherans, the reason we feel good about the Lutheran Church and the things it teaches, and the reason we know so many Bible passages is because there were standards of excellence that were expected of us. And I really feel like, especially in the 70s, we've got a bunch of, mushy-brained kids, a lot of them who don't know what the Christian faith is about, who don't know what Lutheran theology is about. And I think that's a disservice to them. So a combination of it all.
Part of the thing I'm trying to get at too is what are they able to retain as far as memory goes? I'm not really too concerned. I do want to trust the memory work, but at the same time, I don't want them to just tear it back, because I want them to give it a sense, conceptualize, and to give their own answers so that they know what they're talking about. But what is this kid capable of knowing? Like, I was told by one of my professors the other day, maybe 3 to 7 year old, they don't really understand moral concepts and moral concepts. What kind of concepts does not able to experience?
Well, I might disagree with that professor. Because what, see, there, and now that you've opened up another thing, the whole area of values clarification, and that's raising a lot of questions right now, because youth ministry for the last 15 years has really been in values clarification. And I think it was well-meaning when it started out, because we took values that everybody had. You know, you didn't live together, you didn't have sex before marriage, you didn't kill each other, you didn't go out and steal from each other, but we knew those things. That was the law, and those were our values. And then values clarification simply took those values that we had and asked people to apply that to your life. What did that mean to you personally? That was okay when everybody had values. And the reason they had values is because they were taught by their parents, they were taught by their teachers, they were taught by their pastors, they were taught by other members of the congregation, so they were well acquainted with right and wrong. I think a third grader or fifth grader can learn the differences between right and wrong. Part of the problem now is that values clarification is dealing with kids who have not been taught values first. And that's why you get the mushy kind of things where, well, gosh, if it feels good for that person and it's not hurting anybody, then it's okay. And so values are all mixed up right now. I think a fifth and sixth and seventh grader can be taught values and can be taught to appreciate those values. I think you take the catechism and you ask them to memorize we should fear and love God, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then after they have memorized it, then you say, what does that mean? How does that apply to your daily existence? What does the word fear mean? Does that mean you're afraid of God? Or does that mean something else? You have to define terms for them and maybe walk through a day with them and ask, you know, how does this apply? What does it mean? How do you understand it? And then it may be that they're way out in left field and you want to bring them back into to home plate too. If they're way out there and they have no idea or it's really messed up, you may want to bring them back in. To show them, quote unquote, right from wrong.
How would you do that if I ask them questions? How do you try to get them to make applications that could not be used to?
As much as possible, you ask them questions so that they bring themselves back to center. It may be if they refuse to come back to center that for the integrity of your own personal faith, and your own personal belief, that you have to bring them back to center. I mean, if they refuse to come in, okay, for whatever reason, if they just don't understand it and not sure, you may have to say, well, this is what I really understand. This is what we really teach. And it may be that you have to go for another couple of weeks trying to bring them in. There comes a point where you do have to stand for the integrity of your faith. I believe that, too. And they may never come to your opinion. I guess that's, you know, we have to be willing to accept that. But at least you have to let them know where you stand. At the same time, you have to maintain a certain camaraderie or sensitivity to each other. If you come down really hard on them and you just say, well, if you believe that, there ain't no way you're going to go to heaven. Watch out, because that sixth grader might just be kind of testing the waters. It's a whole process of listening and talking and being sensitive.
One of the things that I've experienced in seventh graders in a confirmation class setting is that they have trouble conceptually understanding, well, basically, what does this mean? Like, for example, they'll read a Bible passage. Okay, they read the Bible passage. Okay, what does that mean? How does that apply to what we're doing? And they really can't put it into words. They can repeat a passage, a section of the Bible passage, word for word, but they can't put it in their own words and explain what that means. Is that common? Is that something, a skill that they're just starting to develop in that stage?
It is. That's a part of the mental skills that are beginning to grow. They may be able to repeat more by rote than personally apply it. I think maybe one technique to get them into that personal application is don't ask them individually, Johnny, what does this mean? But give them some time in a group of three or four kids to talk about it. And maybe one has a vague idea, and when he or she shares that vague idea, the other says, well, maybe, and then you begin to have a little conversation and interaction, and just in the process of the process, they'll be able to apply it. And there also comes the point again where you may have to say, well, this is what I understand it to mean. And you owe them that. You owe them that explanation.
Just a couple of points that might be helpful from my experience raising children in that age group and teaching others. One is that there's a tremendous fluctuation in children. You're liable to have a half a dozen other classes that are really good at abstract thought and conceptualization and also for zero. And another one is this thing about morals and values and that kind of thing. With my own children, I just had to set an example of what I believe was right, and I required that much as far as, you know, I could control. And then hopefully that is implemented in them.
They can't learn morals and values unless somebody's sharing with them moral and values.
We're probably wrecking your outline, but talking about group movement, one of the big questions I wonder about with the group is how well are they working groups? Can they work in groups and stay on the subject and not end up talking about school and you know, girls and all that kind of stuff? Can they get things accomplished in groups? Is that something to try?
I think so. One of the things that I've found is you have to trust them to be able to do it. And a junior high kid, in fact, this is true for any youth ministry, they will do exactly what you expect them to do. I firmly believe that. If you believe that a junior high, seventh grade class is going to be a bunch of rowdies, they will be, because you expect it. If you expect them to be well-behaved, if you have expectations, certain standards of behavior in your classroom, and you uphold those standards, I believe that they will, to the best of their ability, do that as well. If you expect them to learn, they will learn. If you expect them to learn nothing, they won't. It's really strange, but it comes right down on the back of the teacher. And so I do believe you can expect junior highs to learn particular information, and that they will. They're in the process, though, like Dave said, of, you know, developing their mental capabilities. May not all be on the same level, but that's okay. You can still have expectations of them.
I don't think it's wrong to expect something from they can't necessarily accomplish either. Mm-hmm. They need to be challenged and pushed out beyond where they're
as long as well that you are sensitive to them and can encourage them, even if they do fail, or if they don't meet your expectations 100%, that's still okay, John. You know, you're still an okay person. God still loves you. I did want to look at the 10 tips for junior high counselor, because I think there are 10 tips that can help you in a confirmation setting, a retreat setting, or wherever you're working with young people, but our first one, dedicating your ministry to Jesus Christ, seems like it should go without saying. There are an awful lot of people who want to be such good friends with teenagers that they will accommodate or compromise the things they believe or what they're supposed to be about, simply because they want to be good friends. And you, there are people who are teaching confirmation, there are people who are counselors in youth groups who never mention the name of Christ. And the whole concept of ministry is lost. They may have all kinds of activities, but they're never Christ-oriented or Christ-centered. Be genuine. I think you have to be honest. You have to be upfront with the kids. They have to know where you stand, and it has to do with the integrity of your faith. You shouldn't attempt to be something you're not. You shouldn't be you shouldn't fake things. You have to be careful about being the authority and the guy who cracks down on them, because sometimes junior highs can be fragile, and you do have to be a friend. Let junior highs know that you value them as persons, that they're not just a drudgery in your life because, you know, you were assigned the seventh grade confirmation class and you got to get along for an hour and a half on Saturday morning. Value them. That's the only way you can ever appreciate them. That's the only way you'll ever be successful with them. That they are real people with real opinions and real feelings.
It seems like the whole thing is that you in the group, if you can individualize that, once that's the last part of it, where or when do you have that opportunity? Or how can you develop that opportunity?
Sometimes you have to look for it. Sometimes it just happens. It may be that one of your junior high kids is out playing basketball in the parking lot, and that's an opportunity to spend 10 minutes talking. It may be that you'll have to say, Mary, why don't we go down and have a Coke? And you just spend 10 minutes talking that way. There's one piece in the junior high kit called Tips for Walking Through a Junior High, Tips for Tiptoeing Through a Junior High. And I don't know if you've ever thought of it, but going to the junior high where the kids are and being a part of their, for example, going to the junior high at lunchtime, sitting with some of the kids who are members of your church or members of your confirmation class, send something to them. They might be embarrassed for a little bit, but then it's kind of neat, and they begin to think, gee, that's really neat, you know, that he took the time and came down here and he's having lunch with us. So sometimes the opportunities are there. You just have to take them, and sometimes you make the opportunities. Or maybe you just, you know, it's a part of your program that you will spend a half an hour with each person in the class individually in an informal setting, just talking and getting acquainted. Maybe that's the first thing to do even before you have a confirmation class. The parish visit. You probably have 100 kids in your confirmation class. You have a... I'm sorry, we need another 30 minutes. Well, look at these tips here. Number 9 is a particularly interesting one and also a frustrating one. You've got to be in touch with the junior high world. And sometime go to a drugstore and pick up the magazines. You will be amazed and probably outraged. Listen to their music. You've got to listen to the words that they are singing and that their toes are tapping to. You will really wonder where values are sometimes. But see if you can relate the kinds of things you're hearing to the kinds of things you're teaching. You know, maybe you can take the top 10 and apply it to the 10 Commandments or something. But anyway... Well, maybe this has been helpful. One book I wanted to recommend was Catechetical Helps. You may have seen it or you may use it. I think it's one of the best. Kurt. The purple cover book is available from CPH. It's probably in the bookstore. It has a lot of practical stories that apply biblical truth.
And thanks, Dr. Lee, for coming to the session.
I suppose. Oh, that's for the thing I'm going to do with you. Oh. For the whole bit.
This is kind of hard for me. When I listen to the music and the music, it's terrible, it's outrageous, it has no place in the Bible and Christian. How do you get that across without coming off as being in a sense authoritarian? Or they would might expect that of somebody from an older generation.
Well, maybe that's okay, because you've been honest with them and you've expressed yourself. And I think it's a process of them discovering what's wrong with them, or discovering why you have to discern the gospel. And it may be, most people don't listen to words. They listen to music and they really like the beat. But if they listen to it enough, it becomes their value. And some studies have shown that simply by sitting down and listening seriously to what is being said, maybe having words in your head, can be very revealing. But you did have a good, I really did.
Sorry that she's going
back. I don't know.